Welcome. To Arcade Audio.
Welcome to this week's episode of Married with Movies. I'm one of your hosts, Samantha Mullet. Sitting next to me on the couch is your other host, my beautiful husband, Chris Mullet.
I'm not used to drinking soda out of a cup. That's in my beard. I have a very moist, Coke-flavored beard right now.
That's the grossest thing I think I've ever heard you say.
Thank you all. We've been moist Coke-flavored beer. I said that like a Cockney accent. We're moist Coke-flavored beer.
Cock-flavored.
I'll take two of those, please. Whoa, right. It is late Sunday evening.
It's 9:30.
It's late, man. We've had a long weekend. We were on the sun a lot yesterday. Like, look, we've been going through stuff. I feel like Jillian's Dogman plush is like bent over and squished on the couch. Like, I gotta listen to these two fucking guys.
Hulk Hogan's
got his back turned to us. That's how bad of a podcast this is on a weekly basis. Hulk Hogan has turned his back to it. If you're new here, what you just heard is somehow par for the course. In terms of opening banter between Samantha and I, before the two of us proceed to talk about a random movie from our massive movie collection. And yeah, that's about it. That's the show. How you been? How are you?
Are you talking to me or the audience?
You. The audience can't answer me.
Yeah, but you never...
Immediately. This is a conversation that the
two of
us have.
You don't ever listen to my answer anyway, so...
Your answer is normally like one word. You're like, I'm fine. You answer like my mom rates food.
I'm great. Thanks.
That's not how my mom rates food. I don't think my mom's ever said something that was great once in her life. Food-wise. She's not going to listen to The Sixth Sense, hopefully. We only recorded a couple days ago, so we don't have a lot to discuss, except our weekend festivities, which were interesting, to say the least. Today we had what we called Jilly Day, where our daughter got to pick everything we did in a day we stayed in the house. We had a good time, basically just playing games and hanging out. Unfortunately, the little one has now kind of come down with some kind of a bug, but...
Of course, because...
Of course, it's the changing of the seasons and children and... All the,
yep.
I just can't afford to get sick because I got a week worth of travel coming up next week. Yesterday we went and looked at some dogs.
We did.
Ultimately, did not come home with any.
We did not.
You don't have to start breaking down and crying again.
No,
about
I'm
it.
Fine. No, I just had yawn. That.
Uh huh. There was not the variety and selection that we were really looking for.
Right. It's fine.
Yeah. And then we went to something called the Goblin Market in Oviedo, which was interesting. Think of it as like an artist alley at your local MegaCon, but kind of weirder. It's kind of like a swap meet almost as well of those crafts. So it was so an interesting scene. I enjoyed it. The mall that was attached to had a dope-ass fucking VHS store. So shout out to Ducky's. Kind of funny because we just did Pretty in Pink not too long ago.
We did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did some damage there, including... purchasing a couple really, really rare VHSs, a sealed copy of Dogma.
Wild.
Yeah, I haven't even looked up how much that actually is worth yet. So yeah, we had a good time, good weekend. Would you agree?
It was great.
Yeah. But because of that, we haven't really watched anything else. We're going to be watching next week's movie and probably recording that sometime this week because, like I said, I'm going to be on the road for work.
Yeah. Yep, so it's going to be a little
figure it. We're going to try to be as proactive as possible. I do think the next two movies we have are The Shape of Water and The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So that's going to be...
This is going to get real weird.
Two significant hurdles to make it over. But today's hurdle was no hurdle at all, because it is widely regarded as one of the best thriller/horror movies of all time. The Sixth Sense. And I think I have to read that box.
I do believe
this it is. This was randomly your, selected.
This was a random movie, and I do believe it is your turn.
And I do believe, I mentioned this when we drew it, I have never seen this movie from beginning to end. So this is my first viewing of The Sixth Sense, the number one thriller of all time, which when this DVD came out would have been accurate. It was the highest grossing thriller of all time. Hollywood superstar Bruce Willis, Armageddon, The Siege, brings a powerful presence to an edge-of-your-seat supernatural thriller that critics are calling one of the year's best movies. When Dr. Malcolm Crowe Willis, a distinguished child psychologist, meets Cole Sear, Haley Joel Osment, Forrest Gump, a frightened, confused 8-year-old, Dr. Crowe is completely unprepared to learn the truth of what haunts young Cole. With a riveting intensity you'll find thoroughly chilling and utterly unforgettable, the discovery of Cole's incredible sixth sense leads them both to mysterious and unforeseeable consequences. The most
so close.
I was fucking innovating. Who fucking says a movie's involving? The most involving, intelligent, psychological thriller I've seen in a long time, says Good Morning America. And Bruce Willis has never been better, says ABC TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stupid. Let me get right at the end. What's the score on our
that
path to 25?
That ties it up. 13-13. Which is kind of creepy. Because then it's like with this movie, you know, it's like
that's spooky. That's nothing spooky. You're so lame.
Aren't
sometimes.
We supposed to be kind of spooked out with this? So, all right, so this was your first viewing. So tell us your score.
My score for The Sixth Sense, I'm going to give this movie a 9.
Wow, I didn't think you were going to give this movie that high of a score.
I'm
going to
give this movie a 9.
Giving this movie an 8.
An 8? Wow. But I didn't think you were going to go that low.
Okay. See, so we both, I don't know. You thought better of me and I thought worse of you. I guess that's marriage.
Rare.
What?
It is. Both answers were correct. That is marriage, and in this case,
yeah.
It is rare.
Okay, so this was your first viewing.
Yes.
So. You obviously, I think what we talked about last in last week's episode was a lot about spoilers and everything. And some things it's really hard to not have spoiled for you. And I feel like this is absolutely one of them.
Oh, yeah, it's been
just
26
like the,
years.
Yeah, it's been 26 years. So, yeah, what did you think of the, I guess, the overall execution since you were already aware of the twist?
So it's very, very hard to sit here in retrospect and think about how my score would vary if I walked into this completely cold. Like,
yeah,
I can, because a lot of my comments, a lot of my negative notes, or a lot of the things I don't like about the film are kind of moot if I didn't know what was coming. Like, it is so hard to watch this movie and judge it without already knowing where it's going, because everything, once you know it, seems kind of obvious.
Which is part of my response,
yeah,
and why I gave it an 8, which is still a fantastic score for a movie.
Sure.
Like, let's be real, but lower than maybe what you were thinking of, because this is not the first time I've seen it. So I'm like, all this stuff hits differently once you do know, and you can't unknow.
So it's it all kind of works. There's not just like the movie itself, it's M. Night Shyamalan himself.
Shyamalan ding dong.
So like you kind of have an expectation that there's going to be something anyway. So let's say you didn't know what the specific twist was, but you do know M. Night Shyamalan. Like you're also
sure.
Like going to be more observant and going to be trying to pinpoint and figure out things as
yeah.
you go. Even like watching it, I'm like, people really didn't figure this out. Like,
look,
it seems
this is the.
But I'll never know, and that's why I'm giving it.
Quintessential twist. Like, this is the quintessential swerve movie, and I'm not even allowed to talk about swerves anymore, and it makes
You're
me
yeah,
so
great.
Mad.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because you're right. Like, looking back, it's like, how did we not know where this was going?
I mean, hindsight is what it is.
But
the opening scene, even, because the opening scene is really, really good in establishing the tension, establishing the love that these two characters have, establishing that it's kind of weird as shit in a lot of times. But, like, from that, like, really nobody considered, like, He dies there? Like, nobody...
No.
Like, gave it a thought to the time, like...
No, because that was unheard of to this point.
Why?
It just was. This 1999, boy. Nobody did that shit yet, did they?
I don't...
Did they have a twist like that, where their
focus... Alfred Hitchcock existed. Like twists happen in movie. I'm well aware. Like... Not, I don't know if the specific, the person alive is dead the whole time that you thought was alive. Like, I don't know.
Right, but in those movies that you just referenced, like, the establishing shots don't spoil the twist, do they? Like, it's not what the twist is, right? Makes
sense. There's definitely breadcrumbs laid throughout that lead you up to it.
Right.
Same thing happens here, but yeah, I don't know if it's specifically going back to the opening
scene. To the opening scene.
Yeah, I don't know. But all that's to say, like, even knowing it and even having probably a less than ideal experience watching this movie for the first time, because I know everything that's kind of happening and going on, it's still a fantastic movie. It is really the peak of M. Night Shyamalan's career right from the jump in the way of, like, the performances he gets out and how he's able to really be, like, foreboding and suspenseful. Like, this movie fucking nails it. And it also has, like, a lot of heart and warmth to it. Mm-hmm. You're not even listening to me because you're on whatever Instagram or game you're playing.
No, I'm not. It was something that came up on the IMDb.
For the first time ever, IMDb has an ad that plays.
No, mine always have ads. I clicked on it by accident.
Okay. So, did you see this in theaters?
I believe I did.
So, you would have been 12, about to be 13.
Probably. When this came out.
So, you saw it in theaters. Did you know the twist when you saw it for the first time?
Well, no. I mean, I knew it afterwards. But, like, I mean,
well, everyone knows the twist afterwards if they watched it.
Well, yeah. The movie. I mean, I haven't changed in, like, what I said last week. Like, I don't like spoilers. So, obviously, I saw the movie, and then I knew what happened. I didn't know what happened going into it. Right, no, so I was 12.
It's the longest way to answer...
I said no.
Question ever.
Stop being so antagonistic.
I'm not antagonistic. Stop being so...
Great comeback, man. Great comeback, babe.
So, when you watched it then, did you put it... Because, like, people seriously put this on a pedestal. Like, the AFI list that came out, like, a year or two after this, had it in, like, the top 100 movies ever. It's kind of crossed the line in terms of these type of movies don't necessarily get nominated for Academy Awards, and it's got nominated for so many of them.
And, I mean, it paved the way.
M. Night Shyamalan has a career still to this day because of this movie.
Absolutely. For better or worse.
Yeah.
For better or worse, he still does. And honestly...
Like, do you think it deserves that? That level of...
I mean, it's hard to answer that because it's like... It's the one that, like, broke that ceiling, you know, for a lot of these. And not to say, like, I think you're absolutely right. Like, I mean, take Alfred Hitchcock, like you said, like, as an example. Like, he has very noteworthy movies, right? Academy Award material and things like that. But there was just something about this and the genre, because it's so different than a Hitchcock movie. I think the whole genre now really is. But, I mean, it really did, I think, pave the way for, like, commercially successful, well-received, like, well-acted, well-written, all of that, movies of this vein. That thriller, horror, and then look at... Some of the things we've done on this podcast after this.
This
Midsommar, Hereditary, like, yeah, you this, know?
You're
like,
just making the Hereditary jump because of Toni Collette.
That too. That, this we'll does get to launch it with performances.
So many fucking copycats and
yeah, this kind trope,
of its own like, genre in and of itself.
Absolutely. I mean, so it was the first, so you can't deny that it did something. Deservedly or not, sometimes the first are always well regarded. I mean, it's probably the same reason why so many people regard Snow White as one of the best animated movies of all time.
Yeah.
Because it was the first Disney one. You know what I mean?
That philosophy normally drives me crazy.
I know it does.
Snow White isn't even in the top, like, 100 animated
Absolutely,
movies.
Absolutely, I agree.
Just because it did something first doesn't mean that it's the best.
I agree. But there's something to be said.
This is different because I think there's...
It's just... Turn stuff on its head, really.
There's a level of artistry in the writing, in the directing. The score is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Just like it's the same guy that does the score for Unbreakable, which definitely
yeah.
stands up
oh,
there.
Oh, absolutely.
The performances are... This is probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest...
Child actor performances ever. Absolutely.
And it just...
Everything it did so well, like even with like the pacing, like... Probably the most famous scene of this movie is he's in the bed, I see dead yeah. people, and then it's like that boom mic drop moment, and like that's not even the end.
Somebody dropped a boom mic?
No, I'm saying
sorry,
boom exclamation
yeah,
point.
I got it.
Stupid. You're so stupid.
Gotcha though.
But like that, like, and that wasn't even like the end, you know, like usually people are like, oh, that's the end, like it's the cliffhanger or whatever, but like that was like smack, not even in the middle, like right before the mid of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, I mean, I just think it, like that was the shit in 1999.
Like 1,000%, yeah.
Like it just was.
Well, 1999 is one of the best movie years in general.
It's fantastic.
Ever, just based off of like stuff that kind of, like you figure in that year alone, you get 6 or 7 or 8 kind of really, really big trends that kind of start and develop. So, like, with this, we already talked about, like, the psychological thriller slash horror slash suspense thing. It's the year of American Pie, so then you get the renaissance...
The
raunchy teen comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You have Phantom Menace, so you get, like Hollywood going into overdrive with sequels, really, from that point on, especially legacy stuff. You get stuff like Fight Club, so you got, like, the auteurs getting, like their cult classics out there. Blair Witch, another whole genre out of itself of not just horror movies, but just like marketing in general. Like I for lack of time, The Matrix, you know, those like sci-fi futuristic, you know, hodgepodge movies. Like I could keep going, but 99 is kind of an amazing year in general. And this movie doesn't feel out of nowhere with those. If anything, it's kind of one of the forefront runners. No, one of the
front,
best ones.
One
shut
of
up.
The front, just a front runner.
Yes, in that
on
category.
The forefront.
There you go. You said it right. Thank you. Favorite scenes.
Well, I already mentioned the I See Dead People scene, which that has to be one of your favorite scenes.
It lives up to the hype. That scene is fucking killer. It takes its time. Like you said,
it takes its time.
45, 50 minutes into the movie.
Into it. And then there's just so much after that it just keeps stacking on itself.
It kind of foretells and telegraphs the twist again, but... If you're not really focused and paying attention to it, like
if you
I was.
Just if you just like zoned in,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, even just like that conversation is the dead people. They only see what they want to see. They don't even know that they're dead. Like, come on, like, and that's one of the things. Like, I wrote down, like, watching it now, like knowing, like, yeah. How did I not know the first time I saw it? You know, like, oh man. And then...
Well, there's a lot more blatant. Like, I'm going to point out a couple other ones.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot.
Negative,
other scenes I liked. Which one? I liked the funeral scene when they went to the little girl who died.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that whole like little stretch, and then
see, I didn't like that part.
Oh,
that,
see?
That would be one of my least favorite scenes. I don't need him being a detective or solving murders. Like, like that stuff like kind of felt like
okay, I see it. I see your point.
Unless it's gonna be like I'd be fine with him being like an offshoot. It kind of comes like a fucking story of the week, but then it's
well, just, no, that's Ghost Whisperer.
That's Touched by an Angel.
Whatever. Yeah. I'm like, Ghost Whisperer wasn't that Jennifer Love Hewitt show?
Like that whole stretch is too long. I do like the dad in that scene a lot. The dad I think is really really good.
Oh my god.
So I enjoyed that, but I disagree with you there on that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go.
So my favorite scene besides I See Dead People, and I would argue might even be the best scene in the movie, is the scene with Cole and his mom in the car at the end.
Oh, I love that scene.
That scene is
That's the scene I was looking for.
Amazing, here. And had tears in my eyes because the whole movie, you're kind of battling with Toni Collette's character a little bit.
The sobbing, the emotion.
Like, at one point, I literally was about to write her down as an LVP, especially after, like, the dinner scene where she's, like, just kind of begging Cole to, like, tell her what it is, or, like, tell her the truth about stealing the earring, right?
The butterfly, the bumblebee pendant.
The pendant, sorry. And he just does it, and, like, she kind of veers back and forth, and, like, is she kind of a bad mom, or is she trying her best, considering the circumstances, yada, yada, yada. But, like, that scene contextualizes that she's kind of awful on purpose there, and she's doing an excellent job at the very difficult job she's doing of being the mom to this kid. And that scene, she really excels because it just all kind of melts away as he proves to her what it is that he can do and how much she accepts him. Those two are fucking killer in that final scene.
Yeah, everything about that.
And then, the final scene, like the twist, really does work when Bruce Willis figures it out, and you go back and you see like all the things,
interactions,
and things that happen. And I can only imagine how that like blew fucking dicks off when it happened.
Oh, absolutely.
Like I still get it because if you're not trained to watch for it, you may just they do a good job of contextualizing why all those things would happen.
Right, like, oh, he's late for the dinner, so she's ignoring him because she's mad or whatever. Yeah, like, it plays so well. And really then does. When you realize it, it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, totally intentional.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, and maybe this is only in my head because we put this on a lot for background noise, like Knives Out, The Glass Onion, when it's like, oh, it's like we're only seeing what they want us to see, right? Like, so they wanted us to believe like, oh, she's mad, she's cold because of that, not because of anything else. Oh, she's like, distant, and now she might be having an affair. But it's like, no, actually, like these are the things. And so I think this movie like really did a good job of like putting it in our brains to like read it like that, and then we had to, once we got like the full perspective, we were like, oh shit.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Not specific scenes, but there's just a lot of things that I want to call out that the movie does particularly well. So like, even stuff that isn't inherently creepy, like lingering on, like just some of the, a lot of M. Night Shyamalan's directing and like what his DP is able to do with like the light bulb stuff at the beginning, and like even like when the handprints are left on the table and just like this slowly,
man,
like
that's creepy,
can like disappear.
Creepy as
the mind reading stuff that Bruce Willis does with Ayla Joel Osment, and focusing on the feet going backwards and forwards, the drawers all being open when she comes in and out of the room, like.
And then you don't see that till the end when you see the other ghost there doing all that shit.
It really adds to like the open, like how openly creepy and suspenseful this movie is. To your point, a lot of good, like, subtle, but then also, like, not overly, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Overly dramatic jump scares, like the first one that happens with, like, the first ghost scene, like, heightens it, I think, especially well, and I enjoy it.
I mean, and it does heighten a lot, because then you get that ghost scene of those people hanging in that, in the school, towards the end, and that's,
yep. M. Night Shyamalan's really just on his director tip here. He's got some sick vision. The use of red throughout the movie.
Oh, that's
is awesome,
so
particularly
well
the doorknob that,
yeah,
you're pretty sure there's something going on there, and you're unsure what it is. So when you get that payoff of it being something that he just can't access because there's a fucking table in front of it and he doesn't even fucking realize it. Because it's not like the house that he's used to. I also like the stuttering Stanley scene as well with him and the teacher.
That stuttering Stanley scene was wild.
He kind of freaks out and the teacher kind of, you know, crumbles as well. It's fantastic. And there's a couple other ones. This will lead us into the stuff that I don't like about the movie because it's a trope of a Night Shyamalan. He naturally is going to have in his script, like, some humor that works and some humor that doesn't work. So I'll talk about the humor that works for against that doesn't work.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
What?
Probably your favorite line in the movie.
No, it's actually, the cheese dick thing.
Yeah.
No, it's something that doesn't work. No. I'm referencing the commercial of the fucking shitty kid.
Oh my god, yes.
That they end up watching.
The cough syrup
commercial is like amazing.
It's so good.
Like, because it started, it's like, what the fuck is this? And then when I got it, I was like, yo, that's really clever and cool.
Yeah, when it was really well done. The kid's been
bragging about his cough syrup commercial, he's being such a dick to Cole. You see it, and it's so fucking bad. So
terrible.
So, like, that's the kind of stuff, like, when he's on, like, he's really, really good. But, like, starting the stuff he doesn't. Like, the cheese dick thing is so... like, do you remember what the context of it was?
Cheese dick.
You're doing that like a score. Cheese dick. Everyone's a cheese dick.
It was between when the mom finds the free association writing papers and when Cole starts saying about how they used to hang people at the school.
I don't think you... That doesn't help. You're just telling me when it happened.
Yeah. No, I think he bumped into someone or... No, it was when he first saw that guy. The guy with the wife.
Oh, yeah. Bruce Willis says it to somebody. Keep moving, cheese dick.
Yeah, he says it to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'd also be Bruce Willis doing it and not like a child... It's like Elliot saying penis breath in E.T. If Cole had said that, sure, it makes sense. But Bruce Willis saying it is weird. Also, that engaged couple with the sapphire in Anne's art gallery or whatever the fuck she does. Was just like, these are prototypical, unrealistic characters in M. Night Shyamalan's universe. Doing something that's supposed to be funny or giving us a reprieve of the world
of something,
being built.
Yeah.
And it's like, nah, man, just like, we're fine. We're good. Like, don't worry about us. Keep fucking moving along.
Yeah.
So that's one. I have a bunch more, but what are some of your either least favorite scenes or things you don't like about the movie?
Well, I didn't really like the beginning scene with Vincent, and I know you had to have it.
Is it because of Donnie Wahlberg?
Look, so
I think Donnie Wahlberg really goes for it.
So look,
and is great at being weird as shit in that movie.
So one of the first notes that I wrote about this movie was, I was gonna say, wow, what a cast, but it came up as Donnie Wahlberg and Misha Barton. So never mind.
No, was it? I thought it was Leighton Meester, not Misha Barton.
No, it's Misha Barton.
Misha Barton.
Yeah,
who's Leighton Meester? She's, you know, that Leighton Meester lady?
She's the one who's married to Adam Brody.
Oh, right.
So she was in Gossip Girl. Misha Barton was in the OC.
Tomato, tomato for a 38-year-old white guy. Got it.
But yeah. Well, I think Donnie Wahlberg does a fine job. I'm like, I just could have done without the scene. But obviously, you can't do without the scene. It's probably one of the most integral parts of the movie.
Yeah, I disagree. That scene, I think, is really good.
Okay, fine. So what did you not like?
Not necessarily scenes, but even if I don't, even like knowing the twist and watching it, I think there's a lot of fucking holes here that are just not plugged in. Like, how was he just coming and going and doing whatever as much as he does?
Who?
Like, Bruce Willis's character. Like,
because he's a ghost.
He's a ghost, but still, like,
so what?
There should be something at some point in the hour, 40 minutes that we spend with these characters that, like...
You want the rules of ghosthood? Is that what you're looking for here?
When you say it like that, it sounds like you're making fun of me.
I mean...
it's just hard to stomach sometimes, for lack of a better term, because he gets shot in it.
Oh, man.
Also on stomach, the dinner scene that you referenced before, where, like, you think she's just mad at him because he's late or whatever. Yeah. That scene is so blatant. That's the, like, the biggest, to me, egregious scene where it's, like, obviously he is dead and he is not there. There's also every single time that he's in a room with Toni Collette and they never speak or acknowledge one another. It only happens two or three times. But, like, those scenes immediately take you out of it. And I think it does stand to mention the overall score and enjoyment of a movie. Like we talked about last week with Deadpool and Wolverine. It lowers the rewatchability of the movie.
Oh, it does.
Because it immediately takes you out and makes you wonder and think about what's happening in the movie. Deadpool and Wolverine's a different aspect because it's just reliving things. Well, yes, it's not. It's experiencing things for the first time that you didn't expect to have happen in a theater setting. It's the same thing here. But now, it's things don't hit as well because they stand out as odd instead of you not knowing that they're odd for that reason. So stuff like those that are just as bad, I need to mention. So.
Well, I mean, and I said, I don't know about the rewatchability of this movie. I think, and like, I'm going to be frank with you. I haven't, it's not like The Sixth Sense has been at the top of my rewatch list.
Sure.
For the past 20 something years. I watched it when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever seen the full thing again.
Yeah.
Partly because, what's the point? Right? Like,
it's still a good movie.
No, I mean, I know it's still a good movie, but it doesn't hit the same.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. But, you know, that's just the fact.
Anything else you don't particularly like? Oh, I do have one other thing I don't like. Oh, no. It's going to be saved for my rant. Never mind.
Oh, okay. What else do I not like on this? Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of, like, the mom scenes at first.
You mean with Toni
Collette? Toni Collette.
Yeah. Yep.
But as they heighten, like, then it got kind of, it was like kind of building blocks. So then I think it made sense, but some of those early ones I wasn't.
They are a rough hang.
They were a little rough. Like the one, like when, just like you said, the one when they're talking about the bumblebee pendant, she's like, "You're done, you can leave the table." I'm like, okay, bitch.
Like she's doing a great job, but in the writing,
yeah, I just don't like the scene.
You're left kind of wondering for too long how she truly really thinks and feels, and if you should be feeling any certain way for her.
Yeah.
And that's hard when you're already trying to figure out what's going on. So yeah. I agree with you. All right, well, let's get into, we already talked about some of the technical stuff, because I said, I think this movie for 26 years old, and of course a lot of it's just practically done, looks fucking fantastic. It sounds fantastic. I can't talk enough about how great the score to this movie is. I'm normally calling out soundtracks, less scores in movies, but Shyamalan is 2 for 2 on this podcast for us. Well, less so because I don't remember the score to Split and Glass. We've done 4 Shyamalan movies.
I'm not a big fan of Shyamalan.
Well, you love you. But bullshit, I love you gave Split a 10.
Split. I'm saying.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was. I mean, I think I'm a fan of his good stuff.
Well, I think most people are the fans of good products.
When are we gonna watch Signs?
Never seen Signs either.
Well, maybe the next.
The first M. Night Shyamalan movie I honestly got watched from beginning to end was The Happening. Oh my god, we've done 5!
Holy hell.
How many? Hold on. I'm literally going to take a look right now at the Shyamalan filmography and figure out how many more Shyamalan things we have left to come down the pike. Alright, so I don't know what the fuck Praying with Anger and Wide Awake are. Those barely count. So Sixth Sense, we've watched. Unbreakable, we've watched. Signs, haven't done for the podcast. I've never seen it. The Village, never seen it, don't own it. Lady in the Water, haven't seen it, don't own it. Yeah, so the first one I saw in real life was The Happening.
Which we've done for the show. Wild.
Last Airbender, don't own, haven't watched, will never watch. After Earth, same. The Visit I'm actually interested in. I don't think we own it. That was kind of the beginning of his comeback. Because then we got Split and Glass, which we both did. Then Old, which I have no real interest in. I could probably tell you everything that happened with that movie to begin with. Knock at the Cabin, which I really, really wanted to see. And then Trap, which I've heard so... I've literally on our movie league draft, somebody said how much they love that movie this year, and somebody said it was the worst movie they saw last year. So there's no middle ground for that. And I think that says a lot about Shyamalan as a director. Yeah. That's just kind of how it is.
I think that sums him up.
Also him as an actor, which I'm proud to say, of course, he's got his Hitchcock cameo in this, and he's not bad in it. From the trivia I read, I do believe that he felt he was bad in it, and that doctor character was supposed to be in more scenes, and he cut him out. He cut himself out of the movie. And I'm like, yeah, you should have learned from other fucking future movies where you're so blatantly apparently bad in it. Remember Sixth Sense and how bad you were in it. Because he's not my LVP. Because this is the moment of the movie, that the moment of the podcast we're in. We're now MVP and LVP territory. Well, where do you want to start?
Let's start with LVP.
It's harder. I only really have two people written down.
Yeah, let me get
And I'm
to
curious
the list
to see who who you have.
So
and one person is really just out of a lack of multiple candidates.
I mean, I think the wife, Olivia Williams.
She's my answer.
I mean, because look, there's not a lot that you need to do in that role, right? Mm-hmm. Like you need to be madly in love, and then you need to be devastatingly heartbroken.
Yep.
And then you have to be, like, unsure when, like, somebody else is coming on to you or whatever the case is. But I don't know. I just feel like the chemistry wasn't right.
I like their chemistry in the first scene when they were happy together. I didn't mind it. I don't know.
I just felt like the chemistry wasn't...
You didn't like that scene, yeah.
Right. And yeah. then I... Yeah, and I just felt like it could have been someone else who maybe emotes better, who maybe just has a different aura.
Yep.
Because like
I wrote it as vibe, aura's better.
Yeah, she didn't do anything for me.
She seemed more bored than depressed or sad.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. Like, and that's why it kind of came off as like cold and like I'm just mad at you. Because, like, I've done that. I'm not going to talk to you. Let me sign this check and go. You know, like
yeah, and it's not.
But not. I'm having this anniversary dinner because my husband was murdered and I'm devastated.
It's probably a fine line you got to play based on what's in the script and how you command and do what you're supposed to be doing.
Sure.
But I just even at the end when like she's sleeping and supposed to be like relieved. Like,
why Malcolm?
I just didn't buy it. So yeah, she was mine with a bullet. Olivia Williams, the LVP of Sixth Sense. The only person I'd written down was actually Misha Barton as Puke Girl. Because I just didn't like the way that she puked. I had nothing else. So
I mean, how many people you've seen puke?
A lot. I've seen a lot of people puke in my life.
And she was the worst puker?
Not the worst puker.
Well, then there's your answer.
Great. MVP.
I think this is difficult.
I don't think...
I think it's difficult.
I have a list. I don't think that it is.
I mean, I think it's difficult because... I think that it is hard to do this role. I think it is hard to do Bruce Willis's role, kind of knowing everything without giving it away. But this movie would have been nothing without Haley Joel Osment.
It's Haley Joel Osment 1,000%.
It would have
been nothing. This is literally one of the best child performances in anything ever. Like, it is...
This was his career. What else did he do?
Well, he had a bit of a career after this, but he never reached these levels, obviously, of getting an Academy Award nomination as a child.
Yeah.
But he had a career doing, you know, things like Secondhand Lions and AI and, like, plenty of others. So he had a career before this. He was in fucking Forrest Gump. And you know, he had AIDS on Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah, but when people say, oh, Haley Joel Osment.
It's Sixth Sense.
It's
but that's
Sixth
fine.
Sense.
If it's this good, fuck, I don't think he fucking minds or cares.
And then his sister, Emily Osment.
Who the fuck's Emily Osment?
She was on Hannah Montana.
Oh, no one knows her.
Yeah, nobody knows her.
I literally thought you were making a joke about, like, Elizabeth Olsen.
No, Haley Joel Osment has a sister named
Haley Joel Osment is captivating Emily. From the very first moment he's on screen. And he's so mature. He's so natural. He's so perfect in the role. He blows everybody else in the movie away every single second he does anything on screen. I literally, like, about right after I see dead people line. I literally went on to Wikipedia to look up who the fuck beat him for best supporting actor, and I'm still just as mad as I was before. Because it was Michael...
Is this going to be your rant?
No, this isn't my rant. It's Michael Caine in The Cider House Rules, which is like, okay, I haven't seen that movie, have no interest in seeing it. Love Michael Caine, sure, he's great. But he already fucking had an Academy Award. He didn't need another one. And between Haley Joel Osment and Michael Clark Duncan getting nominated for Green Mile. Like, both those are so much better than I imagined anybody else doing anything that it made me mad all over again. Bruce Willis was on my list. It's a muscle that he doesn't get to flex a lot, and it's nice to see. I can't help but wonder if someone else could have done it better. Because I feel like, you phrased it the best way to argue against it, I feel like, in that he has this ability about himself to, it's believable that he doesn't know that he's dead, because it's kind of like Bruce Willis's...
That's just how he is.
Affable. You make it sound like he's an idiot. Affable, everyman guy that's just kind of getting by. Like the John McClane of it all, right? John McClane's not a superhero. He's a guy that just fucking makes do with what he has, and like he doesn't fucking give up. And there's just kind of a quality about Bruce Willis that makes that fucking work. But I think in some of the more like emotional scenes, it could have stood to go for somebody better. But the two of them together in every single scene, amazing chemistry between the two of them.
Yes, absolutely.
They really have like this warmth and this like need to help one another, which I have it's not a Samantha dumb question a week, it's possibly an unanswerable question. Do you think that at the end of the movie, their last scene together, does Cole know at that point? I think he knows that he's dead in that final scene. When they're, because after the play, of course, this kid ends up being an actor. it just seems to be a perfect natural solution. When they're, when he, like, Bruce Willis, like, sitting on the steps and they're saying goodbye to each other for, like, the last time, like, Cole doesn't need him anymore, right? There's a couple looks and a couple ways that he says things near the end of that little spiel where he indicates, to me at least, that he figures out now that he's actually dead.
Oh, you mean like Cole didn't know that he was dead?
Yeah, I don't think Cole doesn't know the whole time.
I'm pretty sure Cole does know.
The whole time?
I'm pretty sure Cole knows the whole time.
I don't think so at all.
The whole time, I'm pretty sure.
Why doesn't he say anything then? That's an even bigger plot hole to me.
No, because you can't tell somebody that they're dead.
Why?
They don't want to hear anything that they don't want to hear. Even if he had, he wouldn't have heard it.
I guess. I don't know. But I like that scene as well, as they're kind of like natural, you know, washing their hands and bidding each other adieu of one another. And that kind of shows, you know, the job that Bruce Willis does in this movie is good. But, yeah, it's Haley Joel Osment, 1,000%. Toni Collette's a solid number three, like we talked about everything prior. But yeah, it's Haley Joel Osment. You're in agreement, correct?
Oh, yeah, okay. I said I was.
Okay. All right, so Haley Joel Osment, the MVP of The Sixth Sense. Olivia Williams, the LVP of The Sixth Sense. Samantha, do you have a dumb question of the week for us?
Yeah.
Do you know you're dead?
Did you know you're dead? Mm-hmm. No.
Yep, I've been dead for about 17
years. You're so funny. What would you be doing if you were a ghost that was just hanging out?
Oh, man, I'd be watching so many people.
That's gross. Like live porn?
I would go house to house.
That's nasty.
And just hang out until the couple fucks.
You're nasty.
I'm going right next door. Just doing it because I can.
That's
gross. I'm going everywhere. I'm traveling. I'm experiencing everything. I'm going straight to like the fucking Oval Office and watching all the shit happen behind closed doors and be like, fuck you guys. I knew this shit was happening. Like, I'm going to be... Same way, like, if I had a time machine. Like, if I have a time machine, I'm not going back and changing to solve anything. I'm going back to, like, a Toys R Us in, like, 1986 and buying, like, all the WWF LJN's men on card and, like, trying to bring them back with me. I don't know what the rules are going to be yet, but that's, you know, like, I'm going to take advantage of it in the stupidest way possible.
Cool.
What would you do if you were...
You're the problem.
What would you do if you were dead?
Man, I'd just be dead. I'd be mad that I was still here. What do you mean? I would do a lot of what I do today, and I would be on this couch with this blanket.
So I would also, like, just be sleeping. Around. I would still want to be around and, like watching what I'm missing, obviously. Is it addressed in the movie as well? Like, is it kind of the unfinished business part of it all as well? Is, like, why ghosts are still around?
I don't think that it was ever mentioned.
It's not, because basically he figures it out.
And then he's like, oh, bye, and then he fades away.
He sounded so negatively.
I don't think it was the best ending. Like, I don't think it was the best wrap-up ending.
The reveal is the wrap-up.
Yeah.
But the character deserves a bit of a happy ending, and that's what that is.
Sure. But it doesn't answer anything about...
Again, I don't need ghost rules. I don't need ghost rules.
I mean, obviously you do. You've been begging for them this whole episode. You want to know all of the rules.
The modern era, like, it's too competitive and, like, weird, but I preferred it when it was the real world ghost rules challenge. Just going to no-sell the shit out of my joke and rub your fucking hands together with lotion?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to rub lotion on my hands instead of react to your terrible joke that you almost missed.
Real world ghost rules challenge.
You almost mispronounced.
You twice. Fucking laughed the second time, and I nailed it both times. Fuck you. It's rant time. Bruce Willis, watch your mouth about cats. He shits on the fucking play that he's watching in this movie.
Yeah, but...
Oh, no, it's not that play. Sorry, it's the play that... What's his fucking face is in? The
commercial
kid.
Boy.
Commercial
yeah.
boy. When he's talking about, oh, it's probably at least better than cats. No, it's not. And the cough syrup proves it. That kid sucks.
Yeah, but Cats is one of the worst musicals of all time.
Cats is better than every single, not every single, a lot of, many.
Some.
High school play. I was going to say other. I was like, Matilda we saw at that high school is one of the best shows I've ever seen. Now, a cats in high school probably isn't allowed. Cats, they don't do cats in high school, right? It's too horny, right? Cats is too horny. Cats is too horny for high school kids to do. Oh. I swear to God, if, like, Jilly goes, all right, I'm going to, like, so I've already thought in the back of my mind when Jilly starts doing, like, shows in, like, middle and high school and, like, really cares about it and stuff, I'm gonna try, like, with my schedule to volunteer and be involved, but I'm also gonna try to, like, be like, you guys should do Little Shop, you guys should do Noises Off, you guys should do this.
Why don't you just have her audition for, like, national things?
I'm gonna be
stuff.
Like, well, there's none of those shows have kids in them. Like, y'all should do Cats.
If they're Jilly, gonna ban you.
If Jilly does Cats, I will be so fucking happy in my life.
Which cat would Jillian be?
Right now, I mean, obviously, I want her to be the lead.
You don't even Victoria. Remember the lead's name, huh?
Victoria. Excuse me. Okay. I don't want her to be Griselda. She doesn't need to do memory. Jenny, she could do a pretty good Jenny Any Dots, I feel like.
She could, yeah. Who would you be? And why would it be Busta for Jones?
Just because I'm fat?
No.
Busta for Jones.
Why'd you have to do it like that?
I'm in my Cockney accent, remember?
Oh, that's so bad.
I know, I'm a rum-tum tugger, man. I used to be the rum-tum
you're not
tugger.
Rum-tum tugger
I used
now.
To be the rum-tum tugger.
Yeah,
excuse
you used
me.
To be rum-tum tugger.
I'm rum-tum tugger.
Who's a better rum-tum tugger?
Me.
You were, or...
Jason Derulo? You don't even remember his name.
Jason Derulo.
Some impact he makes.
His name's not what I need to remember about that performance.
Yeah, not even remember my performance either.
What?
We're just talking about cock size at this point, all right? That's all that it is. Anything
you
else?
You didn't ask me what cat I would be. I know
cares.
This is not the podcast for
yeah,
this.
Yeah, no one cares.
You're so rude.
You're Skimbleshanks.
No, I'm not.
No, you're Rumble Teaser.
I would be Old Deuteronomy.
No, you're not Old Deuteronomy.
The Queen of the Cats.
No, you're Grantanga. Grantanga. Anything else on the six? I just want to watch cats again. That's all this end up being. I'm going to drop my score down.
Have we done it for the show yet?
What?
Have we done it for the show yet?
Yes, we did it right away. It won it's like the leader. I say it every year. It's the leader in Mullet
That's
Award
right.
wins.
That's right.
I think it's tied with Everything Everywhere All at Once with 4.
That's right. Okay.
No, Everywhere Everyone All at Once is the clubhouse leader with 4. Cats is 3. So.
Fucking it sucks.
Anything else for the third time on The Sixth Sense?
No.
Okay. So, initially, I gave it a 9. You gave it an 8. I'm going to drop my score to an 8.5. The half point is from some of your points that you called out, and me thinking more and more about the points we talked about rewatchability and how the movie is kind of predicated. Like, the movie is still great without even thinking about it, but it doesn't do anything to avoid it being distracting because of that for the rest of time.
Sure.
I did like I said, great performances, a good script. It's got some, like, shining Dr. Sleep vibes in the best way throughout. So, but I'm still going to drop it down a half point, 8.5. Are you locking in 8?
Yeah.
Okay. So an 8.25 for The Sixth Sense, which I think is fair. Some may say low, but still pretty fair score for The Sixth Sense. Coming down the pike, we got The Shape of Water, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. We still got to knock out our last two wrap-em-ups, which is Beetlejuice, and Twisters. But we're going back to the random...
We are.
Random list right now. Samantha, can you pull up the random number generator?
I can.
And provide to me a number between 1 and 2141.
1 and 2141.
Also, like, if people, like, are tracking, like, how many movies we've watched in between, like, the last time we had to do this and the other.
So, 1 and 2141.
Yes.
We've got number 1484.
1484. 1484. Oh boy. 1484 is, I'm going to contextualize it for you here in a second. 1484 is Paris Je T'aime, a 2006 anthology film starring an ensemble cast of actors of various nationalities.
What the fuck is it? Why do we own this fucking movie?
It is a movie that I remember Tony talking about liking a lot.
Oh, great. No offense, but oh, great.
It has got one hell of a cast.
He doesn't fucking listen to this podcast.
Directors of this movie include the Coen brothers, Gerard Depardieu, Wes Craven, Alfonso Cuarón, Alexander Payne, Gus Van Sant. It is the first film in the Cities of Love franchise, so this is technically...
Cool.
We technically already should have done this. I don't know if they're connected or not, because this is the film that preceded New York, I Love You, which we did do for the podcast, I believe.
I don't remember watching a movie called New York, I Love You, number one. Number two, that's way too many directors for a movie.
No, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of one of our first podcasts. What the fuck was it?
The Woody Allen
movie. Was it Woody Allen?
I don't know.
Could have swore we did. Yeah, we did this movie, didn't we?
What?
New York, I Love You?
I don't know. Is it on the list? Let's see.
I'll tell you just a second. Man, I know we're getting old. No, we didn't.
Yeah.
What movie am I thinking
of? We don't even own the New York, I Love You.
It was like one of our first fucking podcasts.
I don't know. Looper.
To Roam with Love. That's what I'm thinking
of. To Roam with Love.
To Roam with Love is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, we did that. I don't think I liked it.
We didn't like it. Well, Paris Je T'aime, I gotta map out if you're gonna read it or am I gonna read it.
No, dog, that's not fair.
It's gonna happen naturally.
It's gonna happen naturally and it better be you or I'm gonna call fucking asterisk on the whole damn thing.
That is our next
It better
film,
be you.
Or one of our next films.
And if you try to make it me, I'll just have you know that I can pronounce French things much better than you.
So how do you say the name of the movie?
Let me see it.
Here.
Paris Je T'aime.
I think I did much better than you. But
how do you say it? Here, let's see.
Paris Je T'aime. That's how I think it should be said.
How to pronounce.
Oh, for crying out loud. While you're doing that, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Married Movies. We encourage you, as always, go to arcadeaudio.net for this podcast and the others in our network of shows.
I was trying to get the pronunciation.
Rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, look, it's up.
patreon.com/arcadeaudio for bonus content. Can you wait until I'm fucking done, please?
I didn't know you were going to go with
that. I literally said while you're pulling that up.
All right, go.
Facebook, Twitter, marriedwithmovies@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the show. For me, @yourhostmalt38 on Instagram. For you,
@jamwithyoursam.
And now I'm done.
Je t'aime. Je meaning I.
Je t'aime.
This is terrible.
Je t'aime.
I barely understand what this Tom Waits sounding dude is even saying.
Je. Pronunciation videos here on YouTube, and we are looking at how to say I love you in French, in the most beautiful love languages, right? How do you go about pronouncing it? Je t'aime.
Je t'aime.
Paris, je t'aime.
Meaning?
Paris, je t'aime.
All right, I'm ready to go. I'm ready now.
Okay.
We're going to nail it.
All right. Great.
We'll find out in 3 weeks if that's correct. 3 to 4 weeks.
Man, I'm putting off watching this movie as long as possible. For Mullet.
This is Mullet.
Signing out for this week's episode of Married with Movies. We'll catch you next time on our couch.
/ the movies. I'm pretty sure this is one of the first, like, it says it came out in 2006, but I feel like, yeah, it didn't really start in America until 2007, because this is one of the first movies that was playing at our movie theater we worked at when I started in 2007 as part of, like, our indie thing. I remember people liking it, so I found it probably for like a dollar somewhere, and now we have it. And we'll probably get rid of it afterwards because you're an uncultured swine.
I beg your pardon.
Thank you for playing Arcade Audio. Play more at arcadeaudio.net.